Afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you happen to be. This is ET First Contact Radio. My name is Jeffrey West, and I'm the guest host for your show today. I'm sitting in for Martin Horst, who is your regular host. And our dear brother in light, Martin Horst, is spending his day honoring the transition of a family member to the next phase of life. So our love and condolences to you, Martin, and your family. May you all be held in light and love, knowing that all is in divine order for the highest good of all in this moment of now. As we begin our show, I'd like to express my love, gratitude, and appreciation to our planet Gaia as she continues to go through her energetic shifts and balances while trying to adjust to darker energies that are being forced upon her. We see Gaia as being lifted up to perfection in the very near future as changes remove the old energies and usher in the new, higher energies. We thank our galactic families and spiritual helpers, physical and non-physical, who are around Gaia at this time, offering their energies and support for Gaia and for those awakening to their call to serve life. We are excitedly looking forward to meeting you, walking with you, working with you, and receiving your help to clean up the negative energies around us. We're thankful for the technologies that are available to allow a radio producer in California, Douglas Newsom, to connect a guest host in Costa Rica, and a guest from Ecuador. From all corners, souls are answering the call to be in service to life to help our planet continue its awakening. We also continue to send our energies of light and love to the country and people of Japan, who even today are continuing to experience energies being directed upon them. We uplift their samurai spirits for survival and honor, and we hold the vision of the country being safe while still being courageous in bringing forth all that needs to come forth in truth for human and planetary consciousness. We hold the frequencies of water around Japan in love and purity, that any radiation that may be present will release negativity and move back into harmony with Gaia and the oneness that is life. We honor the awakening divine feminine and divine masculine energies that are slowly breaking down all that no longer serves human and planetary consciousness. We celebrate this shift in our awakening, and we welcome it as we move forward in becoming the galactic civilization and citizens that we are. In the words from our Syrian galactic family, Selamat Gajun, meaning be one. So be it, and so it is. So just before we welcome our guest for today, there is at least one announcement or headline relevant to the disclosure movement that came out this week. In what is arguably the primary event that has fueled the imaginations of millions for disclosure and the pursuit for truth for many others, information comes this week about the Roswell crash. A document has begun circulating around the world from the FBI that attests to the truth of the crash at Roswell and what this event was about. It reveals a truth that this event involved a vehicle and civilization and technologies of a non-Earth origin. The relevance of this is significant as it marks a potential shift in the strategies of an organization that has been noted for its secrecy. It may very well be a form of soft disclosure, a way of slowly introducing people to what is very soon to come, contact with our galactic families. Citizens are answering the call to share this document around the globe with the belief that it will assist thousands more to accept this one big part of many other events that are unfolding on our planet at this time. Whether or not you are one of those, or regardless of with whom you share this information, all is perfectly okay. Each soul is on his or her life path, and it is to be honored whether or not they resonate with this message. So our regularly scheduled guest today was supposed to be Sheldon Neidel, who is known for his messages from our galactic family and his work through his planetary activation organization. He has been experiencing a shift in his personal energies, a renaissance of sorts, as he calls it, and still feels that he's not quite ready to do an interview with us at this time. We send energies of love and light to him and those around him for all healing that is in his highest good in this moment of now, and we will look forward to welcoming him on the show in the very near future. Selamut Jah. Be in joy. So our guest today was born in the United States. He's a scientist, author of at least three books, ones that I'm familiar with anyway, and a former NASA astronaut. He was a member of the sixth group of astronauts selected by NASA in 1967. The members of this group of 11 were known as the scientist astronauts, intended to train for Apollo missions that were later canceled. Along with his life partner Meredith, they have a retreat center in Ecuador called Montesueños, dedicated to events that will help further awakening and consciousness raising at this time. He is also a strong advocate of utilizing exotic energy sources to help resolve humanity's energy problems. We welcome to the show today Dr. Brian O'Leary to First Contact Radio on BBS.
Well, hi, Jeffrey.
Good afternoon. A little bit of a long preamble there. Sorry to keep you hanging on the line there. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, glad to be here. I'm back in Ecuador after having spent a week meeting you and many other people in Costa Rica. And it's nice to be home again.
Absolutely. No, it certainly was a pleasure to connect with you. For the listener's benefit, Dr. O'Leary is friends with friends of mine, with whom I associate here in Costa Rica, and I had the pleasure of joining Dr. O'Leary and his wife, Meredith, at the house of a friend, a dear friend of ours, and he was here giving presentations on free energy, which I'm sure he will be going into some detail with a little bit further on the show. But I've got to ask you here, Brian, something caught my eye as I prepared that little intro about you. It was this word exotic that was used to describe energies. Most people associate exotic to either dancing or to drinks with umbrellas in them. How might you describe exotic as it relates to energy?
Well, I've never been asked that question before.
I always love to get something.
The point here, Jeffrey, is that there have been discoveries made over the past 100 years, ever since the time of Nikola Tesla, of very unusual forms of energy, unusual from the old paradigm point of view, from the point of view that the only way we can get energy is to kind of struggle to get it, whether it's from hydrocarbons, the oil, coal, and natural gas, or from nuclear power, and people are now slowly getting to realize that those sources of energy, burning them, is highly, highly dangerous and polluting, and is basically destroying the Earth, and that we have to find other sources of energy. And there are many, many adjectives that could be used to describe the energy that we're talking about here, and exotic would certainly be one of them, exotic only from the point of view that we're not familiar with it at this point, but that for the past 100 years, there have been several proofs of concept of our ability to generate electricity to burn fuels which are totally clean, to generate electricity in a purer way so that there isn't damage along the way, along the whole cycle of the production of the energy. And so we're going to need to change our whole perspective on how we use energy, what kind of energy do we use. And it's that idea or set of ideas that's now becoming more and more mainstream. The mainstream has been totally in denial about the possibility that our energy can be clean, cheap, decentralized, safe, publicly transparent, and useful for everybody, and be basically free and abundant. This is the direction we need to go in. And it's also something that we can work on right now without being too exotic or esoteric about doing it, or waiting for some, cosmic event or decision-making that's beyond our own control, that we the people of planet Earth can actually get cracking on this project of generating clean energy. We can do it right now.
Great. Okay. So the people who, I guess on a show like this, it's almost like preaching to the choir. I mean, a lot of the people who would tune in here are probably the ones who really don't need to be convinced of anything. But based on your experience, you have several degrees behind you. You studied in physics, and you had a master's degree in astronomy, I believe, and a doctorate in philosophy in astronomy. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Many people will look up into the sky and perhaps very nonchalantly repeat a quote by Dr. David Bowman from the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey. My God, it's full of stars. This may be the only thing that they see. A philosophy in astronomy suggests to me that you are seeing something more than just stars. And I'm going to kind of segue this into the energy aspect shortly. But how would you describe your doctorate? I mean, what can people get from the concept of a philosophy relating to astronomy?
Well, first of all, it's a PhD in astronomy. That's a doctor of philosophy in astronomy, which is really what most astronomers get. So it's, in a sense, not literally philosophy, but it is. For me, if we go over my life, I'm 71 years old now, and so I've had a long life, and I've done a lot of different things. My PhD in astronomy was 1967, and at that time, I was more a mainstream scientist. I was basically interested in finding out more through the traditional means of finding out more, which are basically using telescopes, coming up with models that are physically consistent with other physical models, but without stretching my neck out too much, because it's very difficult nowadays to be a mainstream scientist, to get your funding, get your research grants, and have a good university position. It's very hard to do that if you step outside the box of normal thinking. And so in my life, my own case, in 1979 or thereabouts, I was a physicist at Princeton. I was on the faculty in the physics department there. And I started to have some unusual experiences, personal experiences. I had a remote viewing experience. I had a near-death experience. And I had some healing experiences. And that led me to a path, which was to ask the question, are these paranormal phenomena, shouldn't they be considered as normal? That perhaps the model of science needs to be much bigger than what's currently accepted in our mainstream culture. So one thing led to another, and I began to realize that Princeton was not my home. Mainstream science wasn't either. That there are many, many things out there, including the UFO phenomenon, including breakthrough clean energy, that are very real phenomena that have been denied and suppressed by the mainstream. but are nevertheless open to scientific investigation using scientific methods. And so by the time I left Princeton, which was about 1982, so we're talking almost 30 years ago, I became what one would call a new scientist. And I've written several books, about 11 in all, some of them on what we call new science, which is basically a new paradigm of scientific inquiry that still uses scientific methods of coming up with a truth or a reality, but at the same time is stepping outside of the box of normal inquiry where most mainstream scientists don't dare to go.
Okay, so that would have been the basis for one of your books, The Second Coming of Science.
That's right. I've done a number of different books in which I've basically reviewed the field, reviewed many of the anomalies in Western science that are due to scientists, mainstream scientists, refusing to investigate such things as the UFO ET phenomena, paranormal phenomena, free energy, some of the healing modalities that are available to us now. It's almost like the paradigms have really split, and the paradigm that is currently accepted in the mainstream culture limits itself to a very kind of set of assumptions that are restricted to very materialistic, reductionistic, and deterministic philosophical approaches, which is not nearly enough to be able to describe our true reality. So it's been my quest since Princeton to try to summarize what is it that we really know, and what is it that we can know, and how can this help us provide a truly sustainable future for humanity and for all of nature. And we have a desperate need to do that right now. And there are many, many things that we can do to achieve those goals. However, we need to courageously stand in our truth and question the worldview that now controls our behavior as a culture. And there's no area that's more important, I don't think, nowadays than the area of energy. The energy we now use is highly polluting, and we need to develop a whole new paradigm of energy generation and use.
Mm-hmm. So you alluded a few moments ago that this form of energy, the new energies, are very slowly coming into consciousness. Can you elaborate on your theories, beliefs, knowledge as to why this information has been repressed? A lot of the listeners have a very good idea, but I'd like you to share your feelings on what you perceive are the major reasons why these energies are being repressed.
Well, the main reason is vested interests that the largest corporations in the world, who dominate the world nowadays, have a very strong vested interest and a tendency to violently suppress alternatives that from their point of view, threaten their viability. And so you have this multi-trillion-dollar economy that depends on oil and coal. People go to war for oil. People are finding increasingly sensitive areas to drill it. The same goes to coal. Mountaintops are being removed. And meanwhile, the routine burning of the oil and the coal is literally destroying the lives of hundreds of millions of people through pollution and what now seems to be possibly irreversible climate change. And so what you're dealing with here, there's a quote I love. It's from Bertrand Russell, in which he said that the resistance to a new idea increases as the square of its importance. So if we talk about really important ideas, such as free energy, clean energy, decentralized energy, that's going to be perceived as a threat to the status quo. And this has happened throughout the history of science and technology. when aviation began, when the Wright brothers first flew, the reporter that covered the first flight was fired from his position because the editor didn't believe that it would be possible to fly heavier than air machine. Scientific American ran a scathing editorial 2 years after the Wrights started flying. Thousands of people observed these flights, and yet Scientific American said that aviation was a fraud, it would never work. This is happening now in the case of energy, that there exist out there several new energy technologies that are truly breakthrough, that produce more energy than goes into the system as measured by traditional means. And they're based on some of the energy concepts from the vacuum or etheric energy, or there are many different words used for this, zero-point energy, free energy, exotic energy. The adjectives go on forever, but the point is that you can take energy out of the vacuum of space, just like you can take consciousness out of the vacuum of space and be able to then transcend time and space and be able to produce energy, vast amounts of energy, that could be cleanly used by all of us, both for electricity and for transportation systems. So we have the so-called zero point or the vacuum energy. We also have cold fusion, which are room temperature nuclear reactions that seem to miraculously occur and have been configured into prototype models that seem to be working, that give us basically more energy that goes into the system as measured by traditional means. And then we have various advanced hydrogen and water chemistries where you can literally run your car on water. These are the new energy technologies, any one or some of which could solve the energy problem once and for all.
Mm, great. No, absolutely. That can't come soon enough. Yesterday's would have been just fine. There's a lot of sources.
Part of the problem there is that even though these proofs of concepts exist and have been coming along for a long time, what people don't realize is that the suppression has been so airtight. There's been no concerted effort to do the needed research and development to really to make these energy sources reliable and truly competitive in the marketplace. As soon as that begins to happen, then the jackals come in, the men in black, the suppressors. This has happened almost every time. And so we're dealing with a very serious social problem. It's not that the technologies are limited. It's that the awareness and the vicious suppression of this have actually put a lid on it. And so people need to become more aware of this possibility, to discuss it openly, and to be able to risk being suppressed themselves, which can in some cases be very violent. So we're talking about not only disclosure becoming an important aspect, but also the disclosure of the possibilities of clean energy for our future.
There are some rumors or some various sources that have indicated that the earthquake in Japan was a human-created event designed to shake up the Japanese government because they were on the verge of releasing greater free energy, which is a threat to the gasoline industry. Are you party to any information relating to that, or do you have any personal thoughts or feelings?
There is a lot of very interesting stuff out there, a lot of claims made by various groups. And being a trained scientist, I tend to be very, at first, somewhat skeptical, but not skeptical like many of my former colleagues who deny everything. So when that kind of suggestion is made, I'm going to need to take a look at the data. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for me to vet information like that right off the bat. what I can say is that nuclear energy is very, very dangerous. In 1975, I was Morris Udall's energy advisor when he ran for president of the U.S., and I worked for his Committee on Energy and the Environment. And at that time, we very methodically and carefully carried out a critique of nuclear power and came to the conclusion that it is highly dangerous, that we have not found a way of disposing at the high-level, long-lived radioactive waste, and that the safety of power plants is seriously in question, particularly if a nuclear power plant were located in an earthquake or tsunami zone. And so we warned people at that time, and fortunately, people listened, and the U.S. basically stopped nuclear power plant new starts, and that was 1975, 35 years ago, 36 years ago. And that was a very important step, practical step that was made to start looking at alternative energy sources, because we've known for a long time that oil and coal is not good for your health either. So I tend not to look at the sensationalistic information that this might have been induced. I'm not denying that it was induced, nor am I supporting that concept. As a scientist, it's very hard for me to vet many, many of these claims. Otherwise, I'd be so busy, I'd have no time to even share. I think that there needs to be a system of technology assessment that looks at each option in energy, and also to look at claims that something might have been induced before jumping to any conclusions. Otherwise, we get just wrapped up in a kind of an endless loop tape of very sensationalistic claims that can't be easily substantiated.
But as a scientist, then, would you be particularly suspicious to observe that in the month since the original earthquake, there have been over 850 earthquakes in that same area, including at least 15 today alone?
Well, these are aftershocks. That's normal. Any earthquake that's that big, which is a 9.0 earthquake, any geophysicist would tell you that there will be aftershocks. And so that's expected behavior. Now, there may be some interesting things to look at. For example, today there was a major aftershock that was centered near the nuclear power plant. That's a very interesting fact. And these are what we would call anomalies, unexpected behavior. And when you look at that, then you might have something to go on, some fact to build some kind of model on that might not be the traditional model. But, in terms of the size of that earthquake, the size of the aftershocks, every once in a great while, you're going to have a 9.0 earthquake somewhere on the planet. And but also, you have these three recent earthquakes, Chile, Christchurch, New Zealand, and Japan, which may be setting up a new kind of pattern that needs to be looked at very carefully as well.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Thank you. So, to say that the new energies are coming, and within the current paradigm of humanity's thinking and being, the energies are coming fairly slowly. Do you perceive, perhaps, that the issue of disclosure, some kind of a formal announcement by different governments of the world that civilizations out there exist, or that there are technologies available, do you perceive that as being a positive event to moving these energies forward, or do you think that really doesn't factor into the equation? It will come regardless, or will a disclosure announcement help facilitate that?
Well, yes. My answer is yes. I think that they're like kissing cousins. They're they're very closely related. The fact is that our reality is simply not what the mainstream is telling us. And it's very obvious that disclosure would be a historic event and something that we've been waiting for a long time, by the way. That plus the disclosure of free energy concepts, I think in tandem, would obviously upset the current paradigm. But boy, we need to do that if we're here to survive. Because I'll tell you, when we analyze in detail the energy sources that we're using now, we are destroying the planet, and we have to insist that we develop new energy sources. And a lot of that then is up to us as proactive individuals wanting to bring in the new paradigm. It's about more than just waiting for disclosure. It has to do with proactive development of exotic new energy sources.
And not only that, a proactive movement as far as consciousness raising as well, to prepare people for not only the advent of new energies, but for the advent of, or the introduction of disclosure, the introduction of a whole new way of living, indeed, that that humanity and our planet is moving towards. So this is really kind of shaking humanity at the foundation, and perhaps this is where science maybe begins to merge with the spiritual or the esoteric. People are beginning to become more aware of things like the Mayan prophecies, the Mayan calendar. Kalaman has done more scientific study into the Mayan calendar. So people are beginning to ask questions as to whether or not the future will involve cataclysmic events, catastrophic events, or will there be sufficient changes to prevent certain events from taking place? So within that space, time as a linear concept of human experience appears to be speeding up. So would you have a feeling as to whether or not all of this is beginning to merge together, and how do you perceive things playing out?
I think I just got cut off, but I was saying about the future cataclysms or whatever. As a scientist, I don't spend much time there. There are so many prophecies that have not been fulfilled. Many more than have not been fulfilled than have been fulfilled. So I just don't want to spend much time hanging out there. Not that that some of the prophecies might turn out to be true. What I can say, however, is that the Earth is being destroyed by humanity, and it doesn't have to be that way, that we can become empowered to come up with solutions. And really, that's my shtick here. Okay. Is to say, well, let's move into the solutions. Let's devise energy sources that are truly clean and cheap and decentralized. Let's purify our water. Let's heal ourselves. Let's heal the planet. Let's ourselves become responsible creators for our future, and insist that this happen in the face of great adversity coming from those who have gone the dark path and have accumulated an enormous amount of power.
Okay. So in the vein of your scientific background, what are you perceiving as far as changes that are allegedly happening on the sun within the solar system? There's a belief that the sun may be moving towards a monopolar existence and the solar flare activity.
Again, there's so many theories out there. There are so many theories, and especially in the kind of the metaphysical and New Age community, that would require a lot of work on my part to either verify or not verify. Okay. There's a lot of grounding that can come from mainstream astronomy, which tends to not support some of these hypotheses. On the other hand, There is also denial among many of the mainstream astronomers. But it's really hard for me to comment on many of these claims. I'm familiar with a lot of them. I'm bombarded with them, in fact. I get hundreds of emails every day inquiring about some of these things, and I simply don't have the time to examine some of those things. That's why I'm focusing instead on, well, while we still have a chance, what can we actually do? And not waiting for some cosmic cataclysm or, you know, future claim. Prophecies tend to be notoriously inaccurate.
Okay, wonderful. And one of the things that I guess you've chosen to do, you've created a wonderful retreat resort in Ecuador called Monte Sueños, and I guess you have you've developed a new workshop, if I'm understanding this correctly, Crisis and Opportunity, 2011, Consciousness, Energy, and the Matrix of Personal and Global Reality. Would you?
Well, yes. What we do, Jeffrey, is we have about four major conferences a year. Some of them are workshops. The one that we had about the nature of personal and planetary reality was a jointly facilitated workshop. I handled the planetary part, and a colleague of mine, dear colleague Jay Schumacher, handled the personal part. He's a psychotherapist. And so that was in January. We're going to have a couple of pretty good conferences coming up. Each one is unique, and we're going to have Bill Ryan with us. I think it's July 9th, who runs Project Camelot. So I'm sure we'll be talking about a lot of very interesting topics like disclosure. In August, we're going to have a conference on money and economics. We will have Ellen Brown, who's very well known in the field of trying to get the bankers out of business, so to speak, and create ethical banking for the future. So we have many, many different topics. We're going to be doing a workshop on free energy at probably in tandem with the one on economics or on new monetary systems. And then we'll probably be doing one later in the year on yoga and consciousness. So we're covering a lot of ground, but we also have, on a daily basis, we have a bed and breakfast service here at Monte Sueños, which has attracted quite a few very, very interesting people, because we're in Vilcabamba, Ecuador, which is quite far away from things. And so we're in a very, very precious part of the Andes, very, very quiet. And it's spectacularly beautiful seeing the misty mountains from here. And we live in a tropical mountainside garden, which is abundant with fruit and vegetables and flowers. And we have created a unique architectural, artistic setting for retreats, as well as just hosting people that come here in their own timing. And Meredith and I, my wife Meredith, is an artist. And so together we kind of combine art and science and truth-seeking to create a retreat, a kind of place that's very quietly reflective, to be able to go deeper into some of these issues that are so important to us here now on this planet.
Mm. But even still, in the space of where you are, you were mentioning that a little bit of development is moving into the area, and that the country is under a form of attack, so to speak, with the oil that's down there.
Well, that, yes. There are several things going on all at once. There is, locally here, a gringo influx. Not surprising. That's happening in Costa Rica as well. And that's not a surprising thing to be happening now. But in parallel with that, there's also a huge amount of oil reserves in the Amazon jungle, the Ecuadorian Amazon, the Peruvian Amazon, parts of Bolivia, Colombia, and Brazil as well. It's a huge amount of oil at today's prices. It's about $1 trillion worth. And the financial temptation is just too much. And so what's happening in Ecuador and Peru especially is that most of the Amazon jungle part of Ecuador and Peru is being earmarked for oil drilling. And that would be totally disastrous. Some of your listeners may have heard the or seen the movie Crude. It was all about Texaco, now Chevron Texaco, going into Ecuador in the 1970s and totally trashing the area. And there's so much toxic waste there and thousands of cancer cases as a result of the pollution of the waters and of the air around the drilling site. And a recent lawsuit judgment against Chevron Texaco was made. It was for $8 billion. It was the biggest lawsuit in the history of the world in environmental matter. And so all of this is going on. And meanwhile, there are some precious national park areas within Ecuador. One of them is called Yasuni National Park. It has the most biodiverse spot on planet Earth. It has more species of mammals, plants, birds, and amphibians than anywhere on Earth. And that's being threatened by oil drilling. And they're already building roads in there, which causes huge amount of deforestation. So the Amazon jungle, the most precious part of it, is being threatened by oil drilling and by deforestation. So it's a big issue here. There are so many huge issues that need addressing, and that's one of the reasons why I've tended to become a little bit more, how should I say, conventional, not quite as far out in looking at claims of this or that happening or in our future, but instead to look at, well, what kind of environmental indignities are going on now, and how are we going to be able to solve these problems? Because the problem of nuclear power, now that we know that that's a problem, the problem of drilling oil in remote and sensitive areas, like deep water drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, all of these activities are just totally destroying us. We are killing ourselves. So we don't have to wait for a cosmic event, earth changes or pole shifts or whatever else. We're doing it right now. We're doing it to ourselves. And I think to the extent that your listeners can become activists and stand up for the truth of what it is we're doing to the planet, and the truth also of what can be done to clean it up is really important right now. We have to become aware of what we're doing and what we could do quite differently.
So within the paradigm then of the way humanity is currently living, with the systems of government that are currently in place, how would you, if it was up to you, how might you envision things moving forward? Like, what might need to happen first? Does humanity need to awaken to the lies of governments and the entities that control governments? Do we have to remove that first, or do people just take the grassroots movement and take these sources of energies that are hopefully fairly cheap to produce, or do we push for disclosure?
Well, I think it's all of the above. People need to become aware that, first of all, what we are now doing is not working, and it won't work. It won't, that the Earth is plunging into an irreparably pathetic physical state of being, whether it's the climate change, whether it's the pollution of the oceans, the acidification of the oceans, whether it's the presence of high-level radioactive waste, whether it's the spilling of oil into the Gulf of Mexico or chemical dispersants, These are all areas that need airing. They need a totally honest expression. The mainstream media has been abysmal at this, at being able to call a spade and say that this is not okay, that we need to totally clean up our Energy Act. These are all areas that need airing. They need careful analysis. We have to analyze alternative energy systems and have an honest look at them. Even solar and wind has its problems because it's so materials intensive and land intensive that's not going to do the job. Well, we have to openly admit, we need to seek the truth. And very few people out there are actually doing the job of analyzing the best energy sources we can have, not looked at from a vested interest point of view, or preserving the status quo, but from the point of view of what's truly best for humanity, what's the cleanest energy we can develop. And the same goes true with other aspects of the environment, purifying our water, recycling our resources so that we don't run out. These are all the most burning questions of our time. Stopping wars, that's extremely important. The wars that the U.S. is fighting now in Iraq and Afghanistan and now Libya for oil. Oil is the key there. It's so stupid and retrogressive. We have to be able to openly admit that and then suggest what we could do in its place. And these are all kind of independent considerations from claims or prophecies about the future, what's going to happen in 2012. That's all very interesting, but I'm more interested in saying, well, okay, what's wrong and how can that be solved?
Great. Well, it had been my intention to open up the lines and perhaps take in one or two callers. I realized I had forgotten to ask the producer for the phone number for people to call in, so perhaps I'll get that sent to me shortly, and we may be able to take one or two calls if there are listeners out there. But with the time that we have left, since this is ET, First Contact Radio, I'd like to kind of come back and focus on this a little bit. Before the show, you had mentioned that you've had contact and had some work experience with other astronauts, and you have your perceptions and feelings of what you know. You know, would you like to share some of what your experiences have been with NASA and how you've grown with that information?
Well, I don't think any of my direct experiences with NASA were relevant one way or the other. It's very clear that NASA's party line is not to admit that the ET UFO phenomenon is real and therefore just pass the buck. And it's very sad to see that, because in my life, well, first as an astronaut and then as a investigator in some of the planetary missions back in the 70s, it was a pleasure to work with NASA, that NASA was one of the super special places to be, where exploring the moon and the planets was like right at the top of their priorities. And it was a very exciting time to be alive and be working with NASA. But later, when I started to look into things like the UFO ET phenomenon at the research that was going on outside of NASA, I became convinced that it was a very real phenomenon. Then I became acquainted with some researchers, really good researchers, including John Mack at Harvard University, the late John Mack, who had done some excellent research on contactees and some of their experiences on what message is being told to humanity by those who are contacting us. And that research has led to some conclusions such as, humans are destroying the planet, and that we have to do things very differently. I think that's extremely important research. It needs to be right in the center of understanding better the ET UFO phenomenon, the disclosure efforts and so forth, that we are dealing with some very wise visitors who also have very advanced technologies and who are able to tell us some things about ourselves that should be obvious anyway. They're obvious to me. I think that certainly is true, is that the UFO ET phenomenon is an extremely important area of research, which has been kind of dropped by NASA. They also are covering up some intriguing pictures taken by some of the spacecraft of Viking and then Mars Global Surveyor of Mars, showing some very unusual features that might be archaeological. And once again, NASA has been very, very clever and aggressively tried to cover up any of that evidence as well. And they've changed their own protocols to not make it as accessible to the public, some of the information, such as some of the planetary pictures. So I'm not very happy with NASA, obviously. I used to be happy with them, but they've become very bureaucratic and very kind of elitist and keeping information away from people rather than make it open.
Okay. Forgive me. I'm just going to interrupt here because with the few minutes that we have left, people can call in. I apologize. I wish we had gotten this in shortly. We might be able to, depending on how many are online now, we have one call that I'll take in a moment, but you can call 888-815-9756, and we'll try and get two or three questions on. We'll answer them as quickly as we can. I understand we have a caller on line number three. Her name is Cher. Good afternoon or morning, wherever you happen to be.
Hi there. I would like to ask, are there some of these energy machines that we could build in our backyard? Like, I've got 12-volt solar, and then when it gets dark or cloudy, I've got to be running a motor to keep the electricity. Are some of these things you're working on something small that could charge batteries like that? And where would we get plans or more information?
Right. Okay. Two answers to that question. One is, the answer is yes. You can have smaller units. But the other question, can I just build it for myself? That's quite a bit more difficult. We're dealing with a whole new technology and one that takes quite a bit of research and development, which, by the way, has been almost totally unsupported by either the private or public sector. So I'm optimistic and I'm pessimistic. I'm optimistic that someday we are going to be able to have smaller units, maybe like in 10 kilowatt segments, that could be used to power your home or your car. The other more difficult part is being able to have a reliable device that could be replicated. And what a lot of people miss is the fact that that takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of engineering to perfect the technology. We're not at the stage yet where you could just, you know, have a circuit diagram and go and build it in your yard. I wish it were as simple as that, but it isn't.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that's great. Wonderful. Thank you, Cher, for calling in. That toll-free number, once again, 888-815-9756. 888-815-9756. We're talking with Dr. Brian O'Leary, former astronaut, author, international speaker, who is sharing his views on alternate sources of energy, disclosure, and events like that. We have just a few minutes left on the show, and it doesn't appear that there is anyone else on the line just yet. So perhaps you'd like to give a 2 or 3 minute summary and wrap up of how you see things going and what you're doing and how people can contact you.
Sure, Jeffrey. Well, my websites are just full of information. I've got a number of websites and blogs, but if you just go to brianoleary.info or brianoleary.com, Brian with an I, B-R-I-A-N-O-L-E-A-R-Y, you'll see a lot of essays posted and a lot of news. There's also the Montesueños, Montesueños, Montesueños.org. But you can get to any of the websites or my blogs through BrianO'Leary.com, BrianO'Leary.info. That will give you a tremendous amount of information. I've also published a number of books. My most recent one, The Energy Solution Revolution, is available either as an ebook or a printing-on-demand book through my website. And that'll give you a lot more information, as well as the essays that I post to my website. The work I'm doing now is basically voluntary. I realize that by its very nature, energy should be free and available to everybody. And that's the direction that many of us are moving in. And so the day is going to come, I think, when it will come out, and it will come out in many places simultaneously, and be free, be given away. And this then will allow people to move into this, but with a caveat that it must be responsibly implemented. It has to come from a higher consciousness point of view. We don't want Dick Cheney running the free energy movement. We need to be very careful about its utilization so that we're not abusing it or using it as a weapon of war.
Great. I've just been given permission here to go perhaps a little bit over our allotted time. If you still happen to have a few minutes, Brian, we have a caller. Would you like to take another question?
Yeah, I could take another question.
Okay, we've got Kathy calling on line two from Costa Rica. Good morning, good afternoon, Kathy.
Can you hear me?
Hi, Kathy. Yes, I sure can.
Hi. I hear other talking in the background. I'm not quite sure what that's all about. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you fine.
Yes, we're hearing you.
Okay. I'm very interested in information about your community in Vilcabamba and about visiting there by signing up. Am I able to get information about that?
Sure. The information is posted on the website, and the website is montesueños.org, montesueños.org. That will give you all the information you need about what's happening here. Basically, we have a bed and breakfast, but we also have conferences on a number of cutting-edge topics like free energy.
Wonderful. I don't know if he's involved with your community, a gentleman by the name of Daniel Leonard.
I'm not familiar with his name.
Okay. I know he has land in Vilcabamba in some community, and he's very much into alternative energy, so I don't know. He comes and goes. He's a very young guy, and he goes back and forth to the States, and he sells alkaline water that copies the water that you have there.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because we've been here, Meredith and I, we've been slowly building this retreat center. Now it's just absolutely beautiful. We're now up to 10 bedrooms with private baths and lots of conference space. And we've been just kind of building here. We haven't been that involved in the local community, in part because of our activities here, and in part because I do this work on the energy, free energy, which takes me all over the world. And so we're not that acquainted with many of the newer gringos and younger gringos that have been moving into the area. The place has changed a lot in
the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's changed
or
a lot.
Years. So. I don't know how many years he's been down there. But I will write to you and try to find out about coming to visit.
Great, great. We'd love to hear from you, and we do take bed and breakfast guests all year round, and we'd love to meet you sometime.
Well, we would have to talk about how that would work out. And I thank you so much for making this available to all of us.
Well, sure. And you know, we were just, Meredith and I were just in Costa Rica. We met Jeffrey 1 week ago. I spoke at the
Speakers Forum.
The Yoga Center and...
At Karen and Sam's house.
Right, yes. So I
yes,
spoke there.
I wasn't and, here.
And then also at the... I'm trying to remember the name of it was the Sat Yoga Center Institute.
Yes, also I know Sat Yoga, yes.
Yeah, so I was just there, and it was great, and I'll be back.
So sorry I missed you, but I'll catch you the next time.
Great.
Lovely to talk to you.
Great talking with you, too.
It's wonderful. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you very much. Okay, our time, unfortunately, has started running out. We've been speaking with Dr. Brian O'Leary, and I'd like to thank Brian for sharing his time with us on ET First Contact Radio. We wish you and Meredith all the success in making your exotic free energies available to humanity as quickly as possible.
Thanks, Jeffrey. It's my pleasure.
Wonderful. No, take care of yourself, and I'm sure we'll be in contact again very soon.
Okay, take care.
All right, have a great day. Create a great day.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye for now. Okay, and I'm Jeffrey West. Thanks to Douglas Newsome for his production assistance today and his support in helping me as your guest host. Martin will return next week, and we will see if Sheldon Neidl is able to join at that time. So I am Jeffrey West, and my work is A Green Print for Life, offering lectures and presentations on events happening at this time relating to galactic, global, and inner peace and healing. Thank you for allowing us to be a part of your lives for this very short time. Galactic, global, and inner peace and healing begins with a choice made by you. You've been listening to ET, First Contact Radio with Martin Horst. I'm Jeffrey West, and always remember... Take care for now. We'll see you next week.